We are joined now by a reporter and a storyteller for NFL Media. He is a Hall of Fame voter, the author of Junior Seau, The Life and Death of a Football Icon, very good friend of this program, Jim Trotter is my guest. Jim, good morning. Good to have you back. How are you?
Romy, how you doing, man?
Good, good. Jim, how about you? How are things?
No complaints whatsoever, man. Life is good.
Good, good to hear it. All right, so you're a San Diego legend. So what was your reaction, Jim, when you saw Drew Brees break the all-time passing record last night?
Oh, at the risk of submitting my man card, I got a little misty-eyed when I saw him with his kids and whatnot. I just thought it was an incredible moment, and it couldn't have happened to a better guy. You know, I always go back to this story. Drew Brees.
That was me. Totally me. Lost that connection. It's a really good story, too. We need to reestablish that, and I will own that. I totally did that. I'm not sure. I have never done that, I don't think, in my entire life. I have never done that in my career. I wanted to hit the cough button, and I hit the hotline button, and I hung up on my guest. It was the first time for everything. Sorry about that, Jim. He's a reporter and a storyteller. Jim, I was saying I've never done that before. I literally just hung up on you when I hit the wrong button, and I've never done that. So my apologies to you. You had a great story locked and loaded about Drew Brees. Hit me with that.
No, Romy, it was just two things here. Number one, he may be the most unique athlete I've ever covered in terms of his singular focus in being great. I remember after he had the bad season in 03 and they make the deal to get Phillip Rivers. And covering the team at that time, I knew I was going to have to ask him about it. So I go down to the facility. He's in the parking lot on the other side of the fence. He knows what the drill is. Says, meet me inside. So I meet him inside, and I said, hey, you know, I got to ask you about them going out and getting Phillip. He says, I'm telling you this right now. This is my team. We're going to the playoffs, and I'm going to the Pro Bowl. Now, mind you, they hadn't had a winning season, I think, in like 7 years, and he had just been benched the previous year. Well, long story short, they have a winning season. They go to the playoffs, and he makes the Pro Bowl. So when the announcement was made, I went to him in the locker room. I said, hey, remember that conversation we had? He said, yeah. I said, you know, I thought you were delusional, right? And he looks at me and he smiles and he goes, I know. And that's just who he is. The more you tell him he can't do something, the more he's going to do it. He just has this singular focus to be great. And what he told his little boys after that game was so true. That, you know, if you work hard and you commit to something, anything is possible. And that's what he lives his life by.
Jim Trotter joining us. You know, watching that game last night, Jim, I tweeted something. I could never tell that story like that, but I did tweet that this guy is the ultimate pro, period, and that's what I meant. I've never seen a guy who is more of a professional athlete, more committed, more dedicated, and lots of guys are, but he truly is singularly focused and the consummate pro. Let me ask you this. For those who do not remember, what was the thought about Drew Brees around the league before he signed with the Saints?
That he might never play again. Remember, he was coming off that shoulder injury. He got hurt in the last game, his last game with the Chargers, in a meaningless game, diving for a loose ball. And I think it was John Lynch that landed on him. And basically, as it has been explained to me, if the labrum is a clock, his labrum was torn all the way around to 11 o'clock. Hmm. And so there was doubt that he would ever play again by some people. And it's one of the reasons the Dolphins decided not to go forward when he was a free agent. And the Saints placed the faith in him and signed him, and they placed the faith in him in part because, let's be honest here, they didn't have anyone else. They were coming off Katrina, and what were they going to do? So they almost took a blind leap of faith that he was going to be okay, and it turns out that he was, and he's gone on to have this Hall of Fame career. But, again, I just couldn't have been more happy for him, and so to see him on the sideline with his kids and his wife, you know, the people who mean the most to him, and to deliver the message that he did to them. It's just, like I said, at the risk of turning my man card, I got a little misty-eyed watching it. I thought it was phenomenal, just an ultimate moment for him.
Jim Trotter, my guest. Well, he's 39 now, but he's on pace for another 5,000-yard passing season, which he does with regularity. Nobody else in history has done that more than once. He does it pretty frequently. How much longer can you see him playing?
Boy, in today's game, Jim, where quarterbacks don't get hit, and the rules are set up for offenses to do well, and knowing the way that he commits himself to his conditioning and his mental preparation and all that, I would say continue to play as long as he wants. I don't know that he will. I think he probably – look, let me say this. If they were to win the Super Bowl this year, would I be surprised if he walked away after that? Not one bit at all. I think that Drew understands his place in history. I think he understands what his accomplishments are, and doing the walk-off is something that I think a lot of players dream about. So that wouldn't surprise me at all. But how long could he play? As long as he wants at this point. He's got a head coach whose system – and schemes he obviously is in tune with. There's talent there offensively for him to continue to do what he does. And again, with the way that the rules have been set up now, I could see him playing again as long as he wants.
Jim Trotter joins us. Jim, in sad news, the Chargers announced this morning the passing of Alex Spanos. How are you going to remember him?
For me, it's more, I don't think football. I think family. This is a man who absolutely loved and adored his family. When I started covering the Chargers in 96, he had already relinquished day-to-day control of his club a couple of years earlier. But, you know, I had dealings with him and whatnot because, you know, he's from Stockton. He was born in Stockton, lives there. I went to high school in Stockton. In fact, went to high school right across the street from his home. So he always felt that there was this connection there. And I just remember every time he would talk about his kids or his grandkids or any time he was around them, those were the things that were most important to him. And, you know, I know a lot of people are going to focus on the fact that during the time that he was running the club, the day-to-day operations for a decade, they only had one winning season in a non-strike year during that time. But the reality also is he's the guy that brought in Bobby Bethard and Bobby Ross, and they're the ones who took this franchise to its only Super Bowl appearance ever. So you can remember the negative, but that was one of the positives. So I just think of a man who loved his family, who was committed to his family, very energetic, passionate, loyal. If you have time, I can give you a quick story about
that
passion. So I think it's 2000s or whatever. But anyway, he had gone to the owners' meetings and he had made a statement about the Chargers needing a new stadium after the city had committed money to renovate Qualcomm Stadium. So a columnist at the time of the San Diego Union Tribune, Nick Canepa, writes a column, and he's critical of Alex for that. Well, the day the column comes out, we're all at the facility for the draft, and we're all hanging out in the lobby, and Mike Riley's there and whatnot, and Alex appears on CU, takes me upstairs to the office, and I mean, he goes off on me. He gives it to me, you know, lets me have it. I let him say what he has to say, and I told him, I said, you know, Mr. Spanos, I understand. I said, but look, if you had said that to Nick in private, that's between you and Nick. I said, but you said it in a public setting. I have to report it. And he went on to say how he was disappointed in me because he's from Stockton, and I had gone to high school in Stockton, and the like. But it showed me that's how he thinks in terms of loyalty. And because he had even said to me, it's almost like, you know, you're part of the family, so to speak. And I'll never forget that because I could see in his eyes that he was genuinely hurt by that. Because in his eyes, because I had gone to high school in Stockton, he thought I was part of the family, you know, the extended family, so to speak. But that's kind of who he was. He was a guy that loyalty meant everything to him, family meant everything to him, and he was a guy you always knew where you stood, whether it was good, bad, or indifferent. He was going to let you know what he was thinking and how he felt. That was my experience with
that. That's a great story, Jim. That is something else. Jim Trotter joining us. That really is a tremendous story. All right. I'm glad you shared that. Thanks for that. Listen, you were in Cleveland on Sunday for the Browns and their win over Baltimore. What did Baker Mayfield show you and how he handled a nasty, nasty Ravens defense?
Oh, a lot. I mean, look, you know, we know victories only count for one game in the standings, but to the Browns, that game counted for more than one victory because you have to understand it's easy. You know, Lorenzo Neal used to always say this to me, it's easy to be a soldier when there's no war. Well, it's easy to not get a true judge of what you have when things are easy, when you're going up and down the field and your uniform's clean and nobody's hitting you. But now you're in a game where you're playing, you know, the second-ranked defense, a defense that had dominated rookie quarterbacks over the last 10 years, and there's adversity and everything else, and you keep finding a way to make a play, to make it happen and whatnot. And so when I talked to, you know, Hugh Jackson and some of his teammates after, you know, that's what they talked about. This was a kid who didn't flinch, who didn't blink, was unfazed, and just kept finding ways to make a play. Because think about it, Jim. You've got a second and 21 from your five-yard line late in an overtime game, and yet you find a way to scramble for 13, and then with a rush in your face, you use your left arm to create space and throw back across your body and end up getting a long gainer that sets up the winning field goal ultimately. That's just kind of who Baker Mayfield is, and there's a different energy when he's on the field, and those guys believe it, and they believe they learn more about themselves facing that type of adversity and overcoming it, as opposed to, say, winning a game 21-0 or something like that.
I think this guy's amazing. I'm blown away by this guy, and I saw what he did in college. I know his background. I know his story. I know he plays as well as he's played on the big stage. I'm amazed at the impact he's had on that team. And, Jim, it's not only just his teammates and the coach. Even Eric Weddle, a guy that you know very well, a guy I know pretty well, Eric Weddle went out of his way to find Mayfield after that game to praise him. What's it say when a guy like that goes that far out of his way to say that to Baker Mayfield?
Well, I'm with you, and I went and sought Eric out to ask him about that, and he looked at me and kind of smiled. He goes, hey, I've done it before. This is just the first time you've noticed it. Hmm. And I said, okay. But then I said, so what did you think? And then that's when he told me. He said, look, I respect the game. And he said, I respect good players, and he made some good plays against us. He said he also made some plays we didn't capitalize on, but he respects Baker Mayfield's game, and a lot of guys do. And I'll tell you a quick story, too, about his leadership. They're in Oakland the week before, and things aren't going well early. You remember he threw a pick six. And so Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator, is getting on Jarvis Landry about, hey, you're my veteran. You need to get these guys right, yada, yada, yada. And Baker walks over, and Baker says, shut up, you know, as if I've got this. And Todd Haley looks at him, and Todd doesn't like it. He loved it. And he told me, he said, this was this young guy taking control of the situation, taking control of that offense. And that's who Baker is, you know. He has already earned that kind of respect from his coaches and his players that they view him, even as a guy who's only five games into his career, as a guy who is now the leader of that offense, if not the leader of that team.
Jim Trotter, storyteller, joining us. Jim, for those who follow you, I'm going off the board now. Those who follow you on Twitter know that you have an amazing dog and know that she just suffered her second ACL injury. How is she doing right now, and what is the rehab process like?
I appreciate you, Romy. It's tough, man. We're actually going to see the surgeon today for follow-up visit. We're 10 days out. What happened, she tore her first one, and she had surgery in June, and they tell you at the time when you tear one, there's a very high probability you're going to tear the other. So I tried to be really diligent and slow with the rehab process, not take any chances, and she loves the ocean. We hadn't been there 4 months, so I took her back, and what happens? One of the currents gets her, and she tears the other ACL. Oh. So it's a 2 to 3 month rehab process. We're in it, and the most frustrating part is for her is that when you have an active dog, you know, they want to get out and get going, and they think they're healthy, and you've got to try and slow them down, which either means, as the vets will tell you, you have to give them some sedatives or, you know, make sure you keep them in a confined space, and my dog's just not used to being confined, so it's tough, but we'll get through it. I appreciate you asking.
Absolutely, Jim. I know how that goes. I mean, if you're an animal lover, I know you are. We are. I've talked about the horse that we lost, but we've had dogs. We've had cats. Man, it's terrible. It's heartbreaking. But the spirit in the animal is so amazing, right? They just keep coming. Oh, they keep coming.
It's incredible. Like, she's like my shadow. Wherever I go, she goes. Even, you know, my wife always says to me, have you ever had a woman chase you like this before? I'm like, no, I haven't. So I said, I don't know that I want another one to do it. So, but wherever I move, she moves. And man, Jim, you know this, being an animal lover. It's just it's an unconditional love, man. And I don't even know how to put it into words. I just know, you know, when you're away from them, you miss them. And when you get home, you can't get enough of them. So I just want to get her healthy and be able to get back out in the water. And now we don't have to worry about ACLs anymore. So it's all good.
Good, man. Those who know, know. Jim Trotter, reporter, storyteller for NFL Media, a Hall of Fame voter. And again, if you have not picked up his book, you should. Junior Seau, The Life and Death of a Football Icon. Good friend of the program. Jim, so good to have you on. Always great talking to you. You know I appreciate you very much.
No, brother, I appreciate you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Jim. Always good to talk to you. Jim Trotter,